What's going on, everybody? This is Sean of Ross Like Music.
And this is the Super Sonido Show. I'm La Molly. This is Blue and Green Radio.
Party people, this is Mr. V of Confessions of a Curly Mind, broadcasting through Blue and Green Radio.
You're listening to Steve Williams at uk5.org.
Welcome to the Blue and Green Sessions.
Ride the vibe with DJ Ronnie Ron.
Cosmic Radio.
Twisted Soul.
Futuristica Radio.
You're listening to the Blue and Green podcast, and I hope you enjoy what we are going to say.
BlueandGreenRadio.com.
Howdy friends, you're tuned into the Blue in Green podcast, episode 133. My name's Imran, thank you for tuning in to our episode today. I couldn't be more excited, we're so thrilled about our guest. We'll get there in a moment. Let's just go through the obligatory rundown of a quick reminder that the Blue in Green podcast runs in conjunction with Blue in Green Radio, the online internet radio station that broadcasts from London and is very fortunate to be able to host shows from across the world, including various parts of the UK, Paris, France, Australia, Melbourne, Australia, Canberra, Australia, Denver, Colorado, in the States, San Jose, California, New York City, and Niigata, Japan. What a lineup, and it's all just a really exciting mix of dedicated and highly impassioned presenters and DJs and music fans first, really. So we have a wonderful perspective on worldwide jazz, and today's guest on the Blue and Green podcast embodies so much of our kind of all of our shared passions. I think there are several devoted Amanda Whiting fans on the station, and so I couldn't be more thrilled to be able to introduce Amanda Whiting as our guest on the podcast today. There's an added bonus to this, and that Amanda was our featured artist for our International Jazz Day celebrations for 2024. We initially broadcast a version of this conversation on the 28th of April, which is the day we celebrated the International Jazz Day. And yes, we have there's a special version of that broadcast, but what you're about to hear is the complete and unedited version of the conversation, so the whole thing in full, basically. And yes, it's a joy to be able to speak to her. She's just got so many successes at the moment, and to sort of be able to speak to her about them. I mean, the releases in the last 6 months as of this recording come courtesy of her collaborative project with the brilliant Don Leisure for First Word Records. That's called Beyond the Midnight Sun. There is her Liminality of Her release as well, which is also her debut as well with First Word Records. And then we have a conversation about her Lost in Abstraction remixes EP, which was released courtesy of Scrimshire's Albert's Favourites. So there's so much to talk about, and we get to talk about her connection to her music, to her journey to jazz, her connection to the harp as well. It's a really great conversation. I'm very grateful for Amanda's time and how generous she was with the conversation as well. So it's just absolute joy. You can find us at blueingreenradio.com. You can find our radio stream broadcasting from there, as well as the full backlist catalogue of our podcasts. I think that's everything. I shall delay things no more. A quick mention, however, we're going to play a minor introduction to the album. We're going to play, we mentioned the vocalist Peach, who appears on a few of Amanda's recent releases, and I thought it'd be a nice way to play a song now to introduce you to Peach as well. So we're going to play Rite of Passage. This one features, of course, Peach on vocals, and this is available on Amanda's The Liminality of Her album release through First Word Records. So following this song, we'll go straight into our conversation. Thank you so much for tuning in. I hope you enjoy this as much as I did. Thank you. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. I'm so grateful. I'm so appreciative of your time. It's such an honor. I'm really, really excited to spend some time having a chat and stuff like that. So thank you so much.
No, I'm honored. Thank you for asking me.
Oh, you're very kind. Well, I guess the first thing is I don't know how you've managed to find the time, if I'm honest. I mean, you've got, I don't know, just going through everything that you've been. I mean, you just got back from Rome, which I hope was a holiday.
It was with my mother-in-law, taking her for her kind of Mecca to see the Vatican. So no,
that's lovely.
It wasn't a holiday. It was hard work. I'm exhausted. I'm more exhausted from that than anything else I've done.
I hope there was some downtime in some capacity.
Yeah, when I sent her to her room.
I'm going to assume you have a very good relationship with her.
Yeah.
That's
move along. Come on now.
That's so great. How long were you there for, if I may ask?
Very long, 4 days.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Felt like a month.
I have this petrifying feeling she's in the room with you, just scowling.
But luckily, she doesn't listen to radio, so I'm okay.
Right. Well, in terms of the time, I guess, firstly, congratulations on the release of The Liminality of Her. Congratulations for connecting with First Word Records. Congratulations on Beyond the Midnight Sun. Congratulations on Lost in Abstraction remixes. This is what I mean about finding the time. I don't understand how you're able to achieve everything that you're currently achieving within the last, say, 6 months or so.
Yeah, but all the people do, all the fabulous people like First Words and Adam Scrimshire, you know, they do all the hard work. I just sort of sit here, practice, write it, and then they do all the, you know, the peddling of everything and getting things moving. So really, it's smoke and mirrors. I'm just sat here with a cup of coffee. Don't believe anything.
but what they're peddling is you. It's you put the hard work is the music part, I'm hoping, anyway.
But that's the part of it. That's kind of every day I turn up to my music room and I really enjoy it. So playing since I was six, and you know, being in my music room is quite a lovely safe place for me, and it's light, and I love being in here. So it's not any kind of hassle or hard work, it's just lovely. I'm just really blessed to have such a lovely, can't call it a job really, can I? I don't want people to really know that I'm sat here having a nice time.
Is this in terms of the last few projects, last three projects that you've released in genuinely about 6 months, is this just like a particularly kind of creative fulfilling period for you, or is this just how the cars have kind of fell and this is like, no, this is exactly how I am all the time, and you know, I'm always sort of bubbling with ideas and trying to put stuff out? Or is this just are you in the midst of just something that's you're just trying to, you're going to capitalize on as long as those juices are flowing?
Well, things, first of all, take a while to come out. So especially the pandemic, it was like everything took an extra year to be printed and all of that. So things you do 2 years ago, you don't see them for ages. And then the thing with Don Leisure, I'd been sending him things over a period of time, and then all of a sudden he said, I was finished. I was like, oh, okay. And then it was him who introduced me to First Word, and things just, and then you're like, oh, that's going to be at the same time. You don't realise. And then a track I did with Gizmo Varellas, that came out the week after Liminality, or 2 weeks after, and you just think, it's just timing. But I do feel at the moment in life, I feel really positive, and things just happen in periods of life that, you know, you just become like, wow, and you look, and then it'll be quiet for a few years, I'm sure, and you just take it as it comes and appreciative and grateful for it all. And it's just part of a wild journey, like I'm being on a roller coaster, isn't it? It's just there 1 minute, not there the next. So I'm definitely somebody, because I'm in my 40s, I appreciate the highs, because what comes after highs is always lows or plateaus, isn't it? So when they're there, you've got to get on and enjoy it. I call it the yes train. I say yes to things and I love it.
is that the process? I think you mentioned the music room. That's like a daily process. You make the time, you go in and you just play.
Well, I'm classically trained. So since the age of six, I've practiced hours every day. When I went to music college, you know, it was 6 to 8 hours a day practice in various formats. That's my job. I used to feel it was more of a job because I would put in all of those hours every day, you know, the 10,000 hour rule. So that was always a very sort of clinical way of approaching music, because being paper trained, as we call it, you read the music, you then have to learn it off by heart and then regurgitate it with your voice on it. Whereas what's happened now is I've gone into jazz and I'm writing my own thing. So creativity is kind of ramped up more. So when I'm in my music room, even though I do all my hours of practice of warm-ups and classical work, you know, then I have the creative side, which is kind of like very playful, very joyful. It's almost, you feel like you're not doing your practice properly, but you're making something. So it's almost like giving an adult some Play-Doh and saying, make something, have a nice time. And you feel a little bit guilty to start with when I first started at it, because I thought I should be doing very strict practice. But now I've sort of softened into the fact that this is all part of the bigger picture, and creativity is so important, and being playful and having fun and loving your music is a big part of being in my music room. So yeah, how I view my music room has changed over time as well. It's now a really joyful, happy place to be in, besides the strict classical practice that I do every day.
Do you in what way do you think your classical background kind of impacts your perception of jazz? I understand you got into jazz quite late, is that right?
Yeah, I always loved jazz. I always loved Harry Connick, and you know, I was never into sort of heavier jazz, but I always loved the vocalist Ella Fitzgerald. Right. You know, I love Louis. I loved listening to Chet Baker as well. So I've always loved that kind of music. And when I was little, I always loved R&B. I always loved hip hop. I grew up with De La Soul and Tribe Called Quest. So that was what I listened to. But I would always be practicing serious classical music. And then it was in my 30s that my husband started going to jam groups every week on his guitar. And he'd come back and say, what's this mean? What's this mean? And I'd be like, I don't know. I don't know what the modes mean. And it was really starting to annoy me that I couldn't answer. I had a degree in classical music and I can't answer these questions. So I thought, right, that's it. I phoned the local music college, the Welsh College, and said, can you help me? Are there any kind of like, you know, courses I could go on? And they said, well, why don't you enroll on the Masters in Jazz? And so I thought, oh God, it was really traumatic. Really dramatic. And so I did that, and you know, I cried all the way home on the first day.
Oh my gosh, wow.
Yeah.
Why was it traumatic? What was happening there?
Just didn't know what they were doing. I couldn't join in. I didn't know what language they were speaking. My teacher on the first day told me to play with one finger. Well, I've got eight, and I usually use them all in a classical flamboyant way. Completely took me down to the bottom of being a musician and starting again. And that was a really hard process for the first year. I wanted to quit. But, you know, the music I was hearing and being indulged in every day was so what I loved and wanted. So I had to retrain as a jazz musician, which is an ongoing training. It's, you know, because it's creative, isn't it? It changes every time you play something. So yeah. I've got my classical chops. I've got my classical, I can play my instrument. But then I had to relearn how to be creative and how to learn the language and the theory of jazz, really, and put it into practice.
So do you mean from the, when we say creatives, are you talking about sort of elements of like improvisation?
Yeah. Oh God, I'd never improvised. I'd always followed exactly what in classical you follow what's on the page to the T, you know, to the dynamic, to the being quiet, to the being loud, to the getting faster. That's all written down for you. So when you take all of that away and say, well, what do you think it should be? It's kind of like you're looking for someone to tell you, I don't know. I've never asked these questions. It's new to me. I've always been told what to do. So it's like you've been institutionalized in a way with a straitjacket of this, play this. And then now it's like, well, what do you think it should be? And it's like, how different can you be? You know, what's your voice? How do you sound? What's your favorite chord? I'm like, I don't know. And that was quite dramatic. Really dramatic.
Yeah.
And improvise. Well, what do I say? Well, how do I improvise? What do I use to improvise? How do you do it? You know, what's the formula here? I need someone to tell me, and then someone to say, well done, that was very good. You don't get any of that. So it was a very different look, a very different approach to music and how I work.
Mm. But was there like a, sorry, please go ahead.
It was fascinating though. It was fascinating. I found it a challenge, but there was never an end point. In classical, you have a piece of music. When you've learned it, you play it. That's it. Job done.
Yeah.
But there's never an end point in jazz because, you know, you listen to different recordings, different takes, Bill Evans, take three of something. You're like, what? It's the same piece. What do you mean a take three? And you're like, my God, it's a completely different piece. Take three, take one. That to me was mind blowing.
Wow. I mean, what did you have like a eureka moment when things just, you know, sort of slot into place or by like a significant leap? Or was it just more time and time and time?
I'm just time. You know, I listen back to things, I think, oh God, that doesn't sound. But I think the nice thing is you can see the evolution of it. You can feel it when you sit within your band and you don't have to maybe count as much, or you're feeling things more as more intuitive between you. You can then, those moments are moments you think, oh yeah, that was, or that felt really good, that improvisation. You know, we had a really good build in it, or you can feel it's kind of bigger than anything you can describe, really. And it's a buzz, and that buzz is very addictive.
Yeah, like, wow, I can imagine. I mean, how if I may ask, what, how does the notion of performing like that, I mean, I imagine you're a master at it now, but like how does that impact your sort of confidence level if you're meeting someone new, someone who you're not very familiar with on a personal level, and they invite you to perform with them in that context?
Scary.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
Awful. But no, it's scary. Yeah.
You
want to sleep the night before.
Wow. Okay. Gosh.
Yeah. And even now, you know, we're preparing for different things, and you can do as much preparation as you like. But it's a different beast on the night. It's you don't really know. As long as you know your chords, you still can't be. I had to let go of the reins a little bit, and you know, I was always so used to everything being so perfect and learned, and that's how it goes. This is how it sounds. If I record it 10 times, it'll sound the same. But now it's kind of like you have to let go of the leash and let the bass player, if he wants to do, you know, three rounds of solos, well, he's going to do it, and you've got to let him. Yeah. Or you may have said, you're not doing a solo in this piece, and out comes a big solo. And you're like, you know, not that I would ever say you're not doing a solo, but, you know, if you're something in the rehearsal, on the night, that person in your band might feel they want to do something completely different because they're feeling it a different way. So it's that the unknown and letting that happen with the faith that it usually turns out to be really great.
Gosh, I feel nervous just listening to you. I don't know what it is. Just hearing about it is like, I've been fortunate through this podcast to have conversations with sort of bands and artists that relish the idea of performing in this way, and it's really, you know, it's inspiring. But you know, when I can consider it, it's just like, I don't know how, you know, what would be involved, the level of practice and attention and care, and you know, to be able to approach these things with a level of confidence is, you know, there's a New York based band called Bright Dog Red who have the leader of the band, Joe Pignato, have been very fortunate to speak with him a few times, and they're strictly an improvised band. Everything about them is they start every performance on stage by saying, if you're wondering what we were going to do today, so are we. And yeah, that would be like the opening line. It's like, oh gosh. And I'm just sweating just listening to him talk about stuff like this. And amazing.
And some people absolutely thrive on that. Some people also don't like preparing, you know. Their routine. So I suppose we're all just really different. And I suppose my classical background made me quite a nervous person, just because the fact that if you're in an orchestra and you mess up, you're messing up a lot of people, and you don't have the skills to get out of it when you're classically trained. Whereas jazz, you do have the skills to get out of it, so you know it's going to turn out okay. And that buzz is like a drug, you know. I think jazzers are all on the jazz drug, because it's this kind of feeling of just, oh, listen to that, you know, that. Wow. Especially in the moment on a stage where someone does an incredible solo, you know, the band starts and that sound, it just, it's like a bath, isn't it, over you. Wow. Amazingness of, makes you feel alive.
Does it go the other way, like if you're like performing in the classical context and you're like, hey, let's do this, and it's like, no, what are you doing?
Oh, well, classical scares me more now, because I think it's just that you can't really get out of things as easily. You haven't got the skill. You learn things off the page, so you don't always understand completely what's going on in it. So it's harder to get out of it when things go wrong. Mm. So jazz makes me feel more at ease in that respect. I'm happier in my little bubble. And the fact, you'd think the fact I wrote these things would be easier, but do you know what? I find it really hard to memorize my own music. I don't know why.
Right.
Yeah, it's a real struggle. I think I'm getting old. Maybe that's it.
No, not at all. It's just, there's just so much of it now. That's what it is. You're amazing. You're a part of so much wonderful music then, and it's an ever-expanding catalogue. So, of course, it's going to be difficult to kind of keep up on top of everything, surely, right?
Well, and you when you write the tracks, I usually write them with one name. Like, I usually kind of put the things that inspired me to write it.
Oh, right. Yes, of course. Okay.
Yeah. So, like, I've got one piece called Ibiza, which made me think of Ibiza, the sunshine, you know. The
right.
City. And then on the album, it's called Face in the Sun. So.
Oh, I love that. Right? Yeah, one of my favorite songs.
Yeah. And you think, oh, yeah, in my head, that's called Ibiza. So I'm battling with the names of the songs. You'll be thinking of that song as Ibiza now.
I am. I've just glanced at the track.
All of them in my head are a completely different name.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, why change them? Why not have it called Ibiza?
Because it was like the liminal in my head was rich and manned. My hubby and I were sat down and we were just playing on a groove, and it reminded me of that. So that's how I recall it in my memory, in my head.
Right.
So then when you put the album together and you think of a kind of a concept for the album, the liminality of her, you know, you then start thinking of that song would fit in. You think of the story of what you want for the album, and then rename them to kind of make more sense within that context.
Right.
So they will fit a bit better with what I want the whole journey to be. And okay. And it's funny how they slot into their new names as well.
I imagine so. I mean, in terms of, that's a great segue in terms of the liminality of her. I mean, there is a even just on paper, just with the title and the songs, I mean, there is a very clear kind of hero's journey narrative that you kind of have running through the project. And obviously liminality references that notion of transition. Yeah. And you've got, you know, rite of passage, no turning back, alchemy, facing the sun, finding the way. These are, you know, it's a hero's journey in of itself, isn't it?
I was thinking of the Paul Kaleo, The Alchemist book.
Oh, excellent. Yeah.
Always inspired by that. And the greatest thing you'll ever learn is just be loved and loved in return. Then that can call, from Nature Boy, all of those, and the music, the scales that he uses, that's used in that as well. It's always been something. I love traveling, so that feeling of the desert and a nomad, and you know, that kind of journey, I think, is not to be cliche or anything, but I think we're all on a journey of some variety, and you know, with peaks and troughs and experiences. It's not the destination, is it? It's
absolutely.
And it was funny, I was speaking to a lady, a harpist from the, I can't remember which orchestra, in New Zealand, Christchurch Orchestra, I think. And she'd given me this presentation. She wanted to share it with me on liminality. And I'd never really thought, I don't think I even knew what the word meant, if I'm being honest. Mm. And it was so interesting. She was saying about the harp. The harp has been around, you know, for thousands of years. It's in the hieroglyphics in Egypt. It's been around for forever. And it's funny how when you hear a harp on a film or in the orchestra, it's usually a kind of a gliss, you know, that running of your fingers over the strings. And it's usually presented at moments of liminality, as in when someone is going to sleep from waking.
Right, okay.
Or if someone's just died, you know, from living. You know, that area in between two points.
Right. Oh, that's fascinating.
The journey. Mm. It's a grey area, which we don't kind of know much about. We don't know what happens when someone's alive and then they die, that period. You know, I was reading something recently about, you know, the usually before someone dies, they start seeing family members and things. There's an area to go to in the world. We don't know about it. And I just thought it was a fascinating place and how the harp is always associated with it. You know, Jack and the Beanstalk, you think from the bottom to the top, that gliss you usually hear when someone's ascending.
Yeah.
I just thought, yeah, the harp is usually put at those points, isn't it? If you think,
oh, that's fascinating. Yeah.
Yeah. So I just thought the word liminal, that place in between two spots, which is actually a really beautiful space, you know, when you're just falling off to sleep and you're just giving in. I just thought it was a really lovely thought to think, actually, it's not a scary place. It's actually a really beautiful, supportive space. Safe space in a way that we all visit, yet we all don't really think about.
It must be amazing to have that. What a gift that was. I guess it, you know, you've been with the harp, as you said, since you were six, and then to be given an entirely new context of an instrument you already know immeasurably well, to kind of almost change your perception of what's at your hands. That's amazing, isn't it?
Oh, do you know what? Yes. Yeah, it was a real moment of, ah, you know, it was really strange because I picked the picture as well. And the picture arrived, I thought, oh my gosh, this all slotted together as it had to be that. And even the tracks, you know, fit the whole theme of that kind of very gentle. The Alchemy is my favorite track. Is just with the bass on the bow and right. just up. It evokes something in me. I don't know what it is, but I sit behind an instrument every day, and I know it's an extension of who I am. It's been with me since I was six, and through some very difficult childhood times as well. My harp has always been by me, and I don't know what it is about it. It's just very calming. They've done loads of research and found that the harp, they use it in America for a lot for post operations.
Oh wow, really?
I've done a lot of work with Alzheimer patients. I used to work on a charity called Live Music Now and Lost Chord, and we would take live music into Alzheimer homes, homes with Alzheimer patients, and yeah, it had a profound effect on them, just relaxing them, bringing back memories. Yeah, music is so powerful, and I think the harp, the frequencies of the harp have a huge effect on people.
Amazing. It is obvious. Well, no one needs to say it. It's already it's a beautiful instrument, but
it is.
Yes, but thank you for that's it's amazing to be able to kind of reformulate the presentation of your album as well, in with that knowledge, and that's a fascinating approach. Did you relay all of this, like when you know Peach, a wonderful vocalist, she appears on a couple of tracks on the album, is there a sit down conversation where you say, this is what I'm trying to achieve throughout this project? Do you have an idea at the outset of what it was going to be, for example, or are these things that just slot into place as you progressed?
Well, you lay the music, you write the music first, and then you work with your band and on the groove that you want. After having done a few albums now, I'm getting more and more strength in knowing exactly what I want. And intertwined, I wanted this sound of this. I used to love Cafe Del Mar type music, and I love this.
Right.
Voices just floating over the top of things. And Chris Cracknell, who produced the album, he produced it after I met him originally, because he had contacted me saying, I've done a remix of Where Would We Be? And I was like, oh, great. And then he put Peach on it. And I was like, oh my gosh, I love her voice. Absolutely love it. And I wanted her to be on this album because I just love her sound. From Brighton, she's 22. She's absolutely phenomenal. So when I was writing Intertwined, I was singing this kind of line over the top that I really wanted. And she's the only person I felt that could do that for me. So yeah, she added it afterwards.
So you're absolutely right. She does a wonderful job.
She does. She just adds her own, she just kind of floats, doesn't it? It's that beautiful ethereal sound, which I felt added hugely to the liminal feel of everything.
Yeah, I think Intertwined is one of my probably two favorite numbers on the album as well. So
is it
yes, that and well, I would have called it Facing the Sun, but I think I'll just say Ibiza is the other one now.
Well, after Where Would We Be, I just thought that that feel just suited our band so well, that really chilled Spanish vibe to it, using the Spanish scale, and yeah, we sit well with that as a band.
Amazing. Was the record, if I may ask, was it kind of already done or on par to being completed at the time you connected with First Word, or was there no album at that point and then you created one?
No, it was
after
done.
Having...
It was done.
Oh, wow. Amazing.
And so I'd been working with Don Leisure, Jamal is.
Yeah.
And he just finished his album and he'd sent it to First Word. They were putting it out. And I said, you know, I'm actually looking for a label at the moment. And he said, wait there. And they got straight back to me and they went, we'll take it. And I was like,
amazing.
And they are gorgeous. Oh my God. Bobby and Ali, what a pair to work with. They are just so positive and inclusive. And, you know, they just, oh, I couldn't ask for a better label. They're lovely.
They are a phenomenal label. It's such a, I think, it's such a wonderful inclusion. I think for them, it must have been amazing just to have you for the Don Leisure record, the Beyond the Midnight Sun. But then obviously to be able to connect with you for this one as well is, that must have, yeah, it must have absolutely made their day.
I feel gobsmacked. I mean, what a risk for them. I feel it's a risk for them, you know, because they're mainly hip hop and everything. I just thought, wow, you're willing to take me on. Thank you. For me, it was thank you. But they're lovely, so positive, and you know, they are so supportive. Honestly, they're lovely.
I know what you mean when you say that, but I don't. I think you're probably doing yourself a disservice with that comment. I don't know. I mean, I think your music permeates so much more into, I don't know, into more contemporary sounds. For me, it was a fit. If that makes any sense, and I was thrilled with it, and I thought, yes, this is a wonderful union. I totally understand what you mean, because obviously they have like Children of Zeus and Katie Tatham and stuff like that. But I don't know. To me, it's a wonderful dimension that absolutely makes sense to me, anyways, and to them as well.
I don't know. It's really weird, isn't it? I think you feel. Because it's such an obscure instrument in, you know, in jazz, you kind of feel like you don't fit anywhere in a way. I'm wondering whether my entire life of listening to the music that they actually put out, that style, whether that's ingrained in my fabric, that it fits because of that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I feel like I've got home with them. I feel like I'm on a label that I'm at home with. I feel like that they accept me for me, warts and all. And, you know, it's weird. And I just wonder whether, because I've always listened to that style of music, whether that's just coming through in what I do, and therefore
I
do fit there, maybe, you know, that feel.
Yes. No, I think that's probably the way to look at it. I mean, it's I don't know, your music is very much a contemporary record, I think.
Thanks.
And it's one, I think, as you've said, in terms of your influences, I look at hip-hop as a really interesting kind of milestone moment for I think just artists really in general, because it's all like jazz legends, like for yourself, you've mentioned Harry Connick Jr. I think you've in other things I've read, you obviously cite the, well, how could we not, Dorothy Ashby, Alice Coltrane, etc. But all of those artists weren't influenced by hip-hop in any way, shape or form. It didn't exist, it wasn't a thing. But then we have this thing that influenced the whole generation, you know, for you and I, and then everyone that went beyond that, it became a part of that music, whether it's something a person can hear or not.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the many things that I think that sort of ties you to First Word, I would say.
Yeah, it's Dorothy Ashby and Alice Coltrane, I actually came to them quite late in life. It wasn't until I was doing my master's that I discovered them. So I never listened to harp music for most of my life. That sounds terrible, doesn't it? I'd always listen to anything but, I think, just because I've been around harps all my life. So it was always, I always listened to contemporary music. But then when you hear Dorothy and Alice, you're like, they are so different in what they do as harpists, completely different kettle of fish to each other. Interesting, like, oh, gosh, you're adding that to that piece. Wow, that's really textural. Alice Coltrane, you know, with her glisses, that. Yeah, an atmosphere. Dorothy, she really plays her harp, you know? She plays every note, and what she does is very complex, so it was interesting hearing harpists coming to them later in life going, ooh, who do I want to be like? This is yeah. New bar for me, this is interesting. So yeah, it's because there's not many harpists in the field really who are doing it. And the reason for that is because of our pedals on our harps. You know, we have 7 pedals on the harp, and we have to change them as we go along. So there's a lot of footwork going on in order to.
Right.
So it's whether you're willing to change your high heels for a flat shoe, which was quite dramatic, I must say. and suck it up and wear flatties. That's what we have to do.
Right. When you did your masters, were there, in terms of, you know, it not being a prominent instrument at, you know, for that genre as such, were there other harpists there, or were you one of very few?
No, I was the only one. Yeah.
Wow.
I think I was the first in the UK to have a masters in jazz on harp.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah. Because it's not a natural instrument for jazz, because the chromaticism of it makes it really hard. Modal music is easier because you don't, but then you've got the two kind of landscapes of sound shifting between them. That's a difficult joint to get between. But like standards, bebop is crazy busy on the feet. So yeah, it doesn't. And then when you've got your feet working really hard, it's very hard to keep the rhythm and things. So there's a lot of things against us. But as my teacher in college was, she said, well, we've all got our kind of problems. You just got to get around it, which has been the biggest process, getting around the problems of our instruments, I suppose. And they're quite quiet, so amplifying them is another deal, you know, coming through in the band, being able to.
I would have thought your teacher would have almost embraced the idea of you being there, because it gives, you know, their work almost a completely new aspect as well, doesn't
yeah.
it? If there's not an instrument, like if it would be loads of pianists and saxophonists, etc. So not to badmouth pianists or saxophonists, but I felt
loads
like I
of
just
them.
Did that. No. Yes, there's loads. A dime a dozen. But then for a harpist, I would have thought they would have been like, oh, this is wonderful. Like, let's look at all the fun we can have as a collective now.
Yeah, they are, but it's how to teach us is the problem. The best teachers I found for me in the end were the piano teachers, but I had to ban their pianos from them in order for them to just sit and actually hear, how do I get around this? How do I work with this? So it was, I think I was a lot harder for them to teach than someone they're used to on their own instrument, you know. We've just got a lot of issues to get around, which has helped me actually, because now I teach a lot. I go around the world teaching jazz harp, and I have lots of books out and things. So I've managed to write a lot of education things teaching you how to get that bridge, again, a liminal place between classical and jazz.
Right.
Which loads of people are wanting to do and are too scared to do. So, yeah, I'm finding the education side of it really great. And I love that. I've just been to Atlanta teaching.
Amazing.
Yeah. So it's quite good, because people love jazz. They absolutely love jazz, but they can't get to it on the harp. So I'm just finding this time of being able to teach that really great. And you know, the smiles on the faces when you throw away the music and say, what have you got? You know, they're like, it's like liberation going on. I'm on a mission.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. Wow, they're traveling around as well with the Atlanta for gigs. That's amazing. That's so cool. Have that connection is incredible.
It is the education side of this, you know, besides what you're seeing in the plane and everything, the other big side is education. I teach in the colleges, teaching classical harpists how to play jazz. It's a big part of my life, and a big part of my life which I love doing as well.
Do you see a lot of struggle from people, or is there more natural
just ability that, you know, they're already embracing the idea of?
You'll always find that. But yeah, generally, it's how do we do this? How do we get around this? And that's the biggest question. How do we get around this? Because I want to play like this. I found over time to enter via modal music and then come, because everyone says, oh, blues are easy. Well, on the harp, they're not. And that was my big problem to start with. A minor blues is, a major blues isn't. So I find if you start at the modal end of jazz, just like a one mode, and then come back round to the blues and then go in that way to standards. That's the kind of the pathway that we go on for education, really.
Mm. I would have thought blues was the antithesis of the harp.
No.
To be honest.
No, it's not. It's really, a minor blues is fine, but the major blues, you have to make loads of compromises on it. Mm. Which you wouldn't think, would you? You think plays blues? No.
Wow. If I may touch on Beyond the Midnight Sun, we've sort of mentioned it a couple of times. Yeah. Your collaborative release with Don Leger. You said a few moments ago about you're getting more confident in kind of knowing what you want in your own releases. When you're in a situation where you're in a double-headed kind of thing, where you're, it's a mutual collaborative kind of process now with this Don Leger record, do you find a lot of compromise, or do you find yourself saying, okay, what do you want me to do at this point? And then you kind of proceed in that way, or is there kind of not a butting of the heads in any way, but do you find yourself fighting more for, well, I really think we should do it something like this, and he's like, oh, I think we should do it like this, and does that make sense, that garbled question?
Don kind of I didn't really realize we were doing an album. He just kept sending things, I kept sending things back, and then he said the album's done. I'm like, oh, okay, I didn't even know. So that was just a gift. He's just incredible. He's just yeah. So when I heard it, it's like, wow, that sounds amazing. So yeah, I'd say he did most of the work on that, really. I just added harp on top. So I haven't really done a huge amount of collaborating yet. I'm going to be doing some work with some people coming up. So ask me again. I've sent some ideas over to people. Everyone works very differently. Some people like to set down like a recorded groove or something, and then I put something on top, then they lay something on top of that, and then it goes like that. Some people are pen and paper and like to work together like that.
Right.
It's just horses for courses, whoever you work with, how they work, really.
Right.
But I haven't put heads Amazing. Yet, but I'm sure that'll happen.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, look.
on that very record, you have the wonderful, one of my favorite people on the planet, Deborah Jordan, guesting on providing vocals for a couple of tracks. You guys sound amazing together. It's very much a dream collab.
Yeah, she's amazing. I heard it. Wow, that's when you put it on your hi-fi. Honestly, first listen. Go, wow, listen to that. Yeah, we have that same buzz in my house when we put things on, first of all.
Yeah.
Like, whoa, this is so good. Yeah, really, really good. She's lovely.
She's amazing. And you guys sound it's a match made in heaven, I think, for you guys to have created something together. And you also, one of my other favorite people on the planet, Simon S, you, it's sort of a small sideway, you went on, you were on the Peter Franks record.
Yes.
As well, not too long ago. I mean, gosh, wonderful track. Another fantastic collaboration I was super excited about for you guys.
Well, it gets sent through and then I listen to it, work on it, work it out, and then press record and see what comes out. yeah, it's no more scientific. I mean, you put in the work before, you have to work out the chords, you listen to it and you're thinking, what am I feeling there? But that's become easier over the last few years, the more you do it, I suppose. You listen to other tracks by that person. You listen. I was working with Matt Johnson this week from Jamiroquai.
Amazing.
Yeah, oh, what a pianist. Wowzers. And his music is quite tricky. So that took a lot of homework to be able to even play what he'd written, just because he wrote it for piano. You know, he wrote the chords, and Jamiroquai music's quite complex. So I was working on that. So I had to go to his studio for that, because I needed more direction from him in order to get what he wanted from me. So you kind of learn what you can do at home and what you have to go to the studio for, and what the kind of sound that they want, and how then you need direction sometimes and how do you get to that, because it's quite complex and you might have to cut in and things like that. So yeah, everything's quite different in the approach to it, depending on the track really.
Wow, amazing. And on that note, if we consider that kind of that exchange in regards to the Lost in Abstraction remixes EP. Now, what's it like for you when you having stuff that you've done reinterpreted by people from a completely different context? Do you embrace the idea? Because we have this wonderful EP, which is has, as you've mentioned, the Chris Cracknell remix, who you already know very well. You've got Scrimshire, Katie Tatham, and Johnny Drop on this brilliant five track EP on Albert's favorite. Shout out to the brilliant Scrimshire. What is it like when you have your music reinterpreted by people? When you hear it, do you think, oh no, why did you do that? Or are you very open to the idea of people taking what you've done in different contexts and things like
that? Well, you press play very tentatively to start with. First you open the email very excitedly and then you're like, okay. Scrimshire, he's just a talent beyond, isn't he?
He's awesome.
He's one of the loveliest people you'll ever meet. He's very caring, very generous, very musical. So I knew I was in safe hands with him. And, you know, he listens if there's something that you're not very happy about. You know, he listens. He's a very good listener. So I knew I was safe. And, you know, Katie Tatham, I love his music. So I knew it was going to be okay. When you hear it, you're like, oh, that's a... And then Scrimshire's remix on the Discarded, I was thinking, how have you done that? Because that track is free. I played it freely as a solo.
Right.
And he's taken it and managed to put it into a groove and do wonders with it and orchestrate it. You're like, oh my goodness me. You listen to it back and it's just wow. Just wow.
It's a great take on the track.
Completely. So I love that. I wish that could be printed. Because that I was listening when I've listened to it back, I'm like, I love all of those remixes, so beautifully different, and a sound I would love. You know, it was such a buzz to listen to actually. So he's really achieved something which I love. I just want it printed. Tell him.
I'll do everything I can. if I'm very mindful of your time, I just have a final question, a kind of point about, I thought I could sort of end as we began and sort of go back to the music room for a moment. It's really to address kind of your Instagram, which is such a wonderful place. Like whenever I'm kind of scrolling and it's you in front of you and the harp in front of a camera, and you've got a big beaming smile and you're like, here's something I'm working on, here's this beautiful piece, and then you play it. It's such a joyous kind of thing that you kind of put out into a pool of cesspool of kind of negativity at times online. And every time I'm scrolling and I come across a new Amanda Whiting video where you're just playing with this such a joyous kind of look on your face, and it's just a wonderful thing. And yeah, so I just when you do that, you obviously get so much out of it, and you clearly enjoy just your music so much, right?
Well, social media, you know, I came to it quite late actually. I think just before the pandemic, my friend said, you've got to be on social media. I'm like, oh I don't want to be. But you know what, it got me through the lockdown, having that social interaction, you know, and working in education and everything, you know, music's being cut out of the schools in huge ways, and music is, and reading and the arts got us all through that lockdown. We interacted online. Instagram, people would say, oh, I'm feeling, you know, send me a message, feel down today, thank you for your video. And you just write back, you're like, you have a conversation then. So the whole social media and Instagram, as much as I hate scrolling and I hate having to be on there, it's been a lifeline. And it's also opened, you know, I went to Atlanta last week. I arrived and I see a pile of people I'm friends with on Instagram. I've never met them, but I felt like they were my friends. So I've managed to go around the world. I went to New Zealand in last January. And there was a pile of people who follow my Instagram. I've become friends with them on Instagram. And it was like I knew them. Stay at my place. Come and do this. Do you want to go out for dinner? In Atlanta, I met a pupil who I've been teaching for the last 4 years. And it was like she was my best friend. We were out for dinner. We hung out together for 4 days. And you just think this whole Instagram thing. So as much as I sit there sometimes thinking, oh, God, this is indulgent, just putting a camera on my you know, but I kind of think, do you know what, this is what I do. I'm sharing something I'm working on today, going, oh, this pedal's really hard, or I've just played this here. But it's kind of like putting it out there. If you don't want to look at it, don't. If you do and you get something from it, great. Makes your day, because you're having a crappy day, lovely. If you've had enough of me, switch it off. You know, it's this kind of, and I get that from other channels as well. So you kind of think it's a bit of a sweetie shop in a way, isn't it? If you want. Yeah. If it helps you through today, or if it's something you just want to listen to for a minute, 59 seconds, or if you want to see, you know, this place in the world I'm at the moment, or it's just kind of a connective thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
People. And also, it's a great audience. I'm saying, look, I've just made an album. You know, go and check it out if you like it. Great. Or I've just put a book out. Here's a little clip from it. You might get something from it. If you don't worry. So it's, I don't know. It's a funny thing. I personally sometimes feel it's indulgent and I don't like doing it. Whereas other times I'm just like, oh, you know, have a listen. What do you think? You know, it's kind of, and I have lots of messages from people who I chat to and my friends, and they're like, oh, I've just done this. Have a look at this. You're like, oh, yeah, you know. So it's just connections, people, music, all of the good stuff, right?
And we ignore the bad. I mean, it was a change. Yes, well, yeah, there is.
that.
It was a change that I think a lot of people had to make, though, isn't it, in terms of during that lockdown, that quarantine period. I mean, everyone, you know, I mean, so I know I've had conversations with people through this platform where, you know, they were just stuck and they couldn't tap into that any kind of creative level because they weren't able to experience life in a way normal people would that we would just from seeing people or traveling somewhere. So it was, I guess, from an artist perspective, you can't really collaborate much. You can't certainly can't perform, and you know, you're
you could.
Those
you could
that connection.
No, but you could perform. I did loads of online concerts.
Oh wow, okay, yes. Well, I mean, in terms of those, I think I had conversations with people who were like paid gigs, basically going on stage and being able to perform and had to cancel tours and things like that. But you're absolutely right. Doing those sort of online concerts in that way was one of those just ways to adapt to the circumstances that were presented.
Well, it was different. I've got friends who did nothing. They did no creativity, didn't make anything. I've got friends who did loads. I did loads in the lockdown. I wrote books and albums. It was really, I think it was, whether you treated it as a kind of, we were all in the same boat. None of us could get out. Yeah. So it was a mindset, wasn't it? How do I keep myself buoyant? And let's use the creativity. I did online teaching workshops and things like that. I also used it as an excuse not to homeschool my son. I left that to my husband because I'm busy, of course, in my own way. So I did loads.
May I ask how old your son
is? 9.
He
was, seven at the time. Yeah, or however.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so home. So I'm like, sorry, I'm working today.
Really? Bye. I wish I could have had that.
I did loads in the lockdown, so I'll be quiet.
Well, I'm mindful of your time, as I say. I can't thank you enough for taking the time today. It's been an absolute pleasure. I've been looking forward to kind of speaking to you for ages, and I wanted to reach out for the longest time. So I'm thrilled that you've kind of made some time, and I hope it's not been too bad.
Oh, it's been lovely, lovely to chat to you. Really lovely. So thank you for asking me, and thank you for supporting, and thank you for lovely questions as well.